Wait a minute. You were the clerk of the presbytery?
I was clerk of Tennessee Valley Presbytery.
So when investigation requests came in, they were sent to you?
Oh, they were. Yeah.
About you?
There was none about me at that time. See, okay. They tried to make it. They tried to do it on the floor. They wanted to do an end run around the clerk. And because again, the clerk's just a mailman.
I am predicting this will be my most fun conversation. It ain't easy being Ryan Beasy, is it, Ryan?
Hello, George. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Just crossed the 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I did. It was a big push. I basically got over 200 in like a 2-week period. So that's, wow. Yeah, I made a push for it. And I
that's
had,
great.
Yes. is this your first time on?
No, I don't. Well, we've done joint episodes before.
Yeah. And I think when we arrange, I usually had you record it because like,
yeah, so you're this just, may be my first time on just, your recording software.
Just Ryan. Right. So, well, this is going to be a fun conversation. And there, you know, Ryan and I basically like went into this with no topic. And then in the last minute or two, some topics came to mind. But we're just going to talk because I know, you know, you have a, I think you have the, well, I don't know, the Polity Matters guys are great. PCA.
I love that podcast.
Yeah. I actually think they have the best like dynamic. They're just, it just works well. But I mean, I think your podcast is probably, we're not going to rank podcasts in the PCA, but you definitely, because nobody can beat PresbyCast, right? So, but you know, in a lot of ways, you're the reason I gave up PNR Churchman, the Westminster Standard podcast.
I'm sorry.
I know. If anybody really is sad about that, you can blame Ryan. So the story was this. And you and I were talking about this right before, just how the patterns of our ministry have kind of followed some common threads. But, you know, it wasn't very long ago that the only real PCA specific podcast was PresbyCast. And a lot of pastors had their own devotional type podcast for their congregation or current events or culture. But like PresbyCast was PCA, you know. And I thought, well, Brad's a ruling elder and he was highlighting all these young teaching elders. You were probably on it. And so I said, and at the time I was becoming more confessional, understanding that getting involved in the GRN and just had a real burden on my heart for ruling elder participation, which of course Brad and PresbyCast has always spoken about. And I said, well, I'm going to do a podcast just for ruling elders, with ruling elders, for ruling elders. And that was kind of the thing. And we were dealing with all the polity stuff. So we were dealing with overtures and all that. And I was the first next guy out. And then that was like December. I don't remember the year. And then at General Assembly, all these new podcasts launched. And so there was the Westminster Standard podcast was yours. The Polity Matters guys, that's when they had all the swag. Also Larger for Life, which
Larger
I guess.
Larger for Life. Yeah,
does that even exist anymore?
Yeah, I don't know if they ever get to discuss the Larger Catechism. More they discuss Derek Bright's activities and things like that. But
yeah,
that's another good one. That's certainly well worth time.
It flies under the radar because I don't see it getting shared a lot on socials. You got to kind of know about it and go to it. But do you remember that? Do you remember that sort of?
I remember. Yeah, it was the Memphis GA. I was getting like, wow, they're doing a podcast. Oh, they're doing a podcast too. Yeah, and I think I went home and said, you know, Jude 3 needs a podcast.
Jude 3. So what is, how did Jude 3 come about?
There was an organization called Firm Foundation Partnership, which was a ministry of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Lakeland, Florida. Oh. And their goal was to promote confessional renewal, biblical fidelity in the Presbyterian Church in America. And it was a ministry of the session. They decided that it would probably be better if that work was done by a separate organization, not as a ministry of the session. And so the mission and work of FFP, Fern Foundation Partnership, was transferred to Jude 3 in the PCA. A lot of some of the elders from that church stayed on the board, and they brought in a couple of other board members since I came on in 2021.
How did you become the face of it?
Well, I asked if I could have a podcast, and and they said, "Yeah, we will sponsor that." And
a lot of people think you're the mastermind behind Jude 3 and the PCA. You get accused of that. I remember it was a big reveal when they, you know, you're like, I'm not in charge of this thing.
There were guys, yeah, because the newsletter was the product which had been going on for years, and that was the product of our executive director, a man named Bruce Kirby, and so the newsletter would be promoting different articles from around the PCA, and yeah, in my former presbytery, there was a guy at a church in a little bit outside of Chattanooga who was just gung-ho to bring charges against me for some things in the newsletter that, you know, Bruce had shared Zach Groff's article, Bruce had shared Scott Clark's article, and this was dealing with racial segregation and how it's bad, and both Clark and Groff were incidentally, against racial segregation, ethnic segregation. Of course, there's only one race, right? The human race, but different ethne, different nations. But this guy in the presbytery was just convinced that me sharing those articles was sinful. And
Sharing anything from R. Scott Clark is sinful. Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
This was before the Christian nationalism. I'm joking. Debacle.
I promise that was a joke.
Yeah. I had like an hour and a half long conversation with the guy in the car he calls me the night before presbytery, and it's my daughter's piano recital. He's like, "Hey, I just want you to know, at presbytery, I'm gonna recommend that we investigate your Christian character." And that actually failed because they didn't get the supermajority that they needed to do it. But he said, "Well, we're gonna do it the next presbytery meeting," or one of the guys. We're gonna call a meeting about this. And the moderator said, "Why don't you just talk with this fella and see if you can't work it out?" And so yeah, I'm on my way to Knoxville for I think it's Sean Morris's PhD party. And so I have this hour and a half long conversation with this guy, and he's like, "Well, you know, this article was wrong, and your views of the unity and diversity in Christ are just contrary to our system of doctrine, and you're so wrong." And I said, well, where have I sinned? You shared these articles." And I said, "Well, first of all, sharing, you know, if you think the articles are sinful, you need to bring that up with Scott Clark's classists and Zach Groff's presbytery. Don't come after me for sharing an article." And then I said, "Well, actually, I don't think I did even share those articles. Well, they're in your newsletter. You put them in your newsletter." I said, "Well, wait a minute. I don't make the news. I'm just a board member. I have no oversight of day-to-day operations." And Pat was like, oh. And so, yeah, so people do think that I do the newsletter. Now, Jude 3 is kind of pivoted. We're no longer aggregating articles. The thought was,
like Aquila Report?
What's that?
Like Aquila Report?
Yeah, Aquila Report does that. You know, you can create a Google News alert if you want. What our goal is now is we want to be publishing articles and paying writers to do that, and we want to publish our own stuff. I'm on the editorial board as well as the board of directors or whatever for that. We've gotten a few out. We have, you know, John Byes has written for us, David Barry's written for us, John McKenzie's written for us, Jason Hyland has written for us, and Thomas Rickard has written for us. All of these are going to be
respectable guys.
Yeah. You know, advocating for confessional renewal, biblical fidelity. Well, one of the things we want to do this fall, starting the summer, is how can we be praying for the PCA? We've got, you know, Jason Pyland wrote, how can you pray for church plants? Zach Bird has written for us, how can you be praying for rural churches? John McKenzie, he's a teaching elder in Knoxville. He wrote for us on how can you be praying for a new presbytery? You know, there's going to be a Knoxville presbytery now. And I thought, hey, this is brand new. There's not often that you get a new presbytery. I mean, in PCA, we're growing at such a rate that it is, I guess, every couple of years we're having new presbyteries. But what are ways that people could be praying for that?
Yeah. So what, so the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, PCApolity.com does some similar stuff. And it, you know, it's like, you can never really have too much good stuff out there. There's so many guys in the PCA to contribute and highlight. And, you know, I remember when the podcast, like, again, that slurry of podcasts showed up, you know, within a couple month period. And, you know, there were some that were kind of curmudgeons about it and really poo-pooing it. And I mean, some nastiness too. And, you know, like they act like the nastiness is on one side, but it's like, you know, I saw passive aggressive comments on X saying, well, are you really a PCA pastor unless you have two podcasts?
And I just thought that was funny.
Well, it was funny, but
and you know, did have two podcasts at one point, though.
I did. And the reason for that was, see, I started Grace to Stand 6 months before I started PNR Churchman. And when I realized how easy it is to podcast, so Grace to Stand was for my church. It came out of COVID and just realizing the power of video messages to my congregation. And they really liked, you know, some of the more devotional, some of the more conversational videos I was making for them to keep people engaged because, you know, COVID. So we were meeting, by the way, but just again, you know, like there was a lot of meetings that were obviously less people and the whole thing. So I said, you know, I should start a podcast and learn how to do this thing. And so I did it with my friend Darren Stone, which was the minister to state in North Carolina. And that's how I ended up with ministry to state, you know, a few years later. But Grace to Stand was for the congregation. And then when I realized how easy it was to just throw a podcast up and people listen, then I started PNR Churchman. And interesting enough, the fast forward to today, I gave Grace to Stand to Darren Stone. And I used PNR Churchman and I rebranded it Grace at the Gates. And that one had, you know, it had the most subscribers already. And that's how I got to over 1,000. But for 2 years, I was going to get rid of PNR Churchman because of you. And I said, and I really just said, well, like, look, he does it better than me. Anyway, it's more professional, although your background now is not as good as it usually is. I don't know. It's kind of washed out there. What are you in a? Are you in a dungeon? Like, what is that?
I'm in the command bunker here at Sullivan County.
It does look like a bunker.
Yeah, I'm in the basement.
You got Calvin. You got some Calvin behind you, and yeah. So I thought, like, man, Ryan. Now again, I said, all right, I'm going to stay in my niche and really try to do the RE thing, and then I've deviated that for various people, Opama Robertson or whatever. But every time I thought I was going to stop doing it, people would tell me not to. And I said, well, it actually, and I'm sure, I'm curious your thought on this, because I know the same, like you walk around GA, there's, you know, 4,000 people there. I heard that like it seated 5,000 people this past year. And, you know, most of the seats in the back were full too. So, you know, there's thousands of people there. And you walk around and people know you.
Yeah.
It's sweet. It's nice. It's like, wow. So somebody wants to listen. Okay. I'll keep doing it. You know, and
it's a blessing, isn't it? When they come up to you and it's an encouragement. It's like, wow, you listen.
Yeah.
Cool.
No, totally.
I think a lot of guys confuse me with the Polity Matters guys. They're like, oh, do you have any more Polity Matters swag? No. I don't have any.
Yeah. It is funny because we're all friends. And you definitely run in those guys' circles.
It is really sweet how there's not competition, I think, within, you know, most of the PCA podcasts. It's, oh, you know, I'd love to come on yours and you come on, you know, we'll do a crossover. We'll, you know, I think it's, and, you know, podcasting now, you know, people, yes, you're right. People have criticized the number of podcasts that pastors have. And if you can do too much. But if you think back to the 19th century and the amount of journals that there were written articles written by pastors and theologians, people don't read anymore, but they will listen to a podcast while they're in the gym. I can't tell you how many people have texted me, hey, I just finished, you know, listening to your podcast at the gym.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a lot of precedent for especially Reformed pastors producing pastoral, theological, doctrinal, worldview type content outside of the pulpit, outside of the pastoral visit and the study for wider publication. But of course, with a focus on the local church, it's impossible to divorce that.
No, totally. So I love that you just went there because, you know, when I had two podcasts and what I basically did was I was alternating them. So every other week. So I do one a week, but it's shared to, you know, between two channels. Yeah. And, you know, there were some, I guess I could say this, it's a couple of years now, you know, some disgruntled congregants over whatever. And what, you know, when you have a disgruntled congregant, they often will pick at other things, you know? So, mm-hmm. so one of the things they went to, well, he's podcasting all the time. And it's like, well, you know, I spend about 2 hours on the podcast, literally a week, two hours a week.
And half your podcasts were like sermon clips from the church that you preach for.
Right. Right. And, you know, to my elder's credit, one of the elders said, well, honestly, when he came here, our pastor always used to be on the local radio. And when he came here, we wanted him to do a radio program. And this is the new way to do radio. Yeah. Like, this is what we want him doing. And you should be listening to the devotional material. So I was like, kudos to them because it is, and it takes me a long time to write something. Now, you know, I've written in the past for various things that show up on Aquila or PCA Polity.
Irreverent, or, reverend.
Don't say that. I don't use that anymore.
Is that against the MNA speech and communication policy? Am I going to get you on a 2-week suspension?
I sure hope not. but like, this is not difficult for me. I'm not saying I'm good at it. I'm definitely not polished. I don't go in with a script, but to do this is literally like, I think I have, you know, 2 hours a week in it. Usually I record for 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, and the preparation and like editing and upload time is about an hour. And that's what I do. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, do you want me? I could be writing articles. It would take me a lot longer.
And you can't edit those while you're doing, at least I edit my podcast while I'm doing dishes. And
what do? You listen and you like, you'll just stop and
I'll listen at double speed. And then if I got to edit something out, you know, if I start talking about, thanks for editing that out. I'll have to go and delete it.
Okay. You put little cues in there for you. I bet you AI will do that for you now, if you just tell it what to edit out.
AI. Yeah. We lost that battle the first time, but we got him in the end.
What are you talking about? Terminator?
AI, you know, with Joshua.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Sorry.
That BZ wit that comes out at the, you know, at the perfect times that I just, and you know, like, again, like I joke, like I am Gen X, but I'm like a boomer. And you know, millennials basically told me there's only two generations. It's boomers and millennials. Gen X and Gen Z just get lumped in. What are you? Yeah.
I'm a millennial.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was the silent generation before the boomers, I think. So I think that's the way it often is, that some generations will be more pronounced. And a lot of it is because the boomers have refused to retire. Gen X has not really been able to lead. You know, you've got guys in their 80s and late 70s still leading, you know, is what's that senator from Kentucky? Well, maybe he's the late senator from Kentucky. We're not really sure. By the time this comes out, we may know.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, like, you know, the president's 80 years old. The last president was like 82. So, yeah, boomers are not retiring. So Gen X guys aren't able to lead. Well, then millennials are just swooping in.
Yeah.
You Gen Xers are going to have to start swatting down these millennials. I think you're
right. Well, maybe we'll get Rubio as the next president. He'll be the Gen X president we have. Because Obama wasn't, right? He was like end of boomers.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah. I'm still looking for that birth certificate. When you move, you lose a lot of things. And, you know, birth certificates is just something that got lost. Although we did find it in time to get a Tennessee driver's license.
Okay. So yes, you're in Tennessee now. How far did you move?
3.5 hours northeast.
Okay.
I moved from the northern border of Georgia to Tennessee, to the northern border of Tennessee with Virginia.
Oh. So, okay. Are you far from Thomas Rickard or Rickard? How do
we're
you say
about 30
name?
Minutes.
Yeah.
We drove together to Twin Lakes and had a good time. He drove, actually.
Yeah, good guy.
I slept about half the time. Kind of felt bad, but I was super tired. And
so, you know, along with this, this is a podcast about nothing or a podcast about podcasts. So there's two Seinfeld references for you to summarize this. So in the theme of podcast about nothing, so you got my job. Do you remember that story?
Yeah. Well, I think it was my job before it was your job, and it never was your job. But yeah, we had applied. I think you applied shortly after I did at Ford Oglethorpe, and either that or B comes.
I just knew it was me and another guy. But it sounds like you were further along in the process than I was.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got the job at Ford O, and Fort Oglethorpe. Yeah, what did Aldo say when we were on his podcast? It sounds like a Hobbit thing,
a Hobbit character, or Harry Potter character. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
But you know, the Yankee government named a town. They put a fort there after the War of Northern Aggression, and they named it after the first governor of Georgia, Governor Oglethorpe. And it is a mouthful.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty area. Definitely. So what's funny about that was I didn't know who the guy was, you know, and then I met you. Well, my first introduction to you was the seersucker suit, getting up at every motion in St. Louis and calling the question, and just like the fumes that were coming out of certain people's heads and ears. It was hilarious because I was surrounded, like they were just so angry at you, and the way you did it was hilarious. And well, now this year's GA, some of those guys were encouraging the calling of the question, but
that, interesting, isn't that?
Yes, but, isn't
know,
it?
With moving the question or the cloture, you have to get 2/3 of the assembly to agree with you. So you know, you may be upset at the guy for calling the question, but if 2/3 of the assembly is ready to close debate, he just made the motion. Somebody else seconded it, and the assembly decided. So you gotta be mad at 2/3 of the assembly.
Yeah.
And maybe we should raise that to 3/4. I don't know.
No. I don't think it would matter. At the end of the day, I think there needs to be balance. I think Mel balanced it well. Yeah. The one time I should have challenged the chair, or at least called, like you called the question at this assembly before the guy who pulled the overture out could even say, like the thing went to the floor and you called the question, and Mel didn't like see the guy, and I didn't.
I should have said, you know, why don't we let, you know, brother Stephen O'Neill speak to that.
And then pulled it out,
but I did want to move the question, but yeah, I mean, I should have done that and I didn't. And, you know, the assembly agreed and
the assembly didn't want
so fast.
The assembly, it did happen so far. The assembly didn't want to really talk about anything. Did you, not that you do, I know sometimes you do, but did you happen to watch my GA recap?
Yes. Yes.
The status quo Big Ten assembly. Good.
Well, and you know, people, see the PCA is not getting any better. Well, status quo in 2016 is not status quo from 2018.
2020. What do you mean 2016,
2018? 2026. I don't do that. Okay. You know, we are, this
or
PCA is in, is in a totally different place from where it was in 2018 and 2019. And even, we've continued to hold the line that has advanced. You know, I think World War I is a good example. You know, when you're trying to do confessional renewal in a denomination, sometimes, you know, World War I, they were trying for the breakthrough, right? In the first year, they got the cavalry behind the lines because they were just, there's going to be a breakthrough and we're going to hit Paris. Well, by 1915, they realized there wasn't a breakthrough coming. And so they did other things with their cavalry, right? They moved to the Eastern Front to fight the Russians where there was movement. But, you know, battles will be measured in yards, right? We gained 3 yards. It's like a football game, except that, you know, 20 million people are dying. Well, I think with the denomination, you know, we made solid, measurable gains over the last 8 years in terms of moving the culture, the expectation, the ethos of what it is to be PCA. And I think the conversation we had on women deacons this year demonstrates that. You know, Jeff Choi said as much, that the reason he brought this overture is because of the Matt Klein and the functional female officer people, that he realized you can't have women deacons, so we need to change the Constitution. Well, the PCA said, we're not changing the Constitution. Our Constitution is sufficient. You know, you cannot, you may not call an unordained person an elder, a pastor, or a deacon. That's just not what we do. So if you think that getting there was unthinkable in 2016. I mean, I remember, you know, the women's study committee report when we were in Greensboro, and vote for this because your wives will love you. We all have pictures of Aslan in our office. To go from that level of debate to where we were in 2016 in Louisville, and the subjects that were debated, and the things were not even debated, right? Women deacons was not a debate. There was nothing. Yes, some guys wanted to pull it out and wanted to emote on the floor about why we should do this, and such is no longer exegetically viable and sound all decisive. But even if the assembly agreed with him, which it didn't, there was no debate because there was no way for the assembly to approve women deacons. So,
right, but like, yes. So I will agree with you. What about the denomination now versus 10 or 12 years ago, and particularly the education of everybody has improved. I think the Gospel Reformation Network helped sort of spearhead that. And just, again, all these different media things that have, you know, people want to
Holiday laugh Matters about has it. Really helped people.
Yeah. And so, but what we are dealing with in the PCA, in my mind, is, and you and I have written on this a few years back during the Side B debates, but it's, again, the sort of the postmodern use of language. And I don't think we have an answer for it because, and this is what the conservatives basically are have realized, but I'm not in lockstep with what guys in our camp have decided about this. I think it's still better to add things to the BCO knowing that men are going to work around it. And, you know, and that's the, you know, like people say, well, there's not enough law that you can make it. People have to enforce it in the courts. But the problem is, I'm not sure we have the wherewithal as a denomination to actually enforce anything in the courts. I mean, certainly like terrible doctrinal things will get enforced, and character issues will get enforced. But like,
maybe.
The whole, well, it depends, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
But I'm not sure, like, anything where there is already existing latitude in denomination, that I just, and that's why I entitled it Status Quo Big Ten.
Yeah.
Like, there were, to me, it just felt like there was a decided on across the board that, look, the spectrum is, it exists, and we'll never get 2/3 of the presbyteries to ever narrow or widen the spectrum. And so let's just not deal with it.
Well, but you have to remember the spectrum has been narrowed very much.
You think?
You can no longer have women pastors. You can no longer have women deacons. And the assembly this year said you can no longer have, you know, the women deaconesses. The assembly is looking very closely at that. Now we'll see what, you know, one assembly is one assembly, but so it is the status quo, but it's the status quo with all of the changes for character, conviction, and conduct.
Now, what do you think about that?
I think that's a great start. I think I think now the PCA has the most robust requirements in terms of ministerial qualifications of any Reformed denomination.
What changed, though, that you're saying now we have the character?
Well, with
what are you referring to?
With the change in, what was it, BCO state and regarding officers that they must
You're talking
be
about
chased.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
They must be chased. Like the basically the compromise coming out of the side B Greg Johnson stuff.
Yeah. It was certainly it was a principled compromise that you know a minister who makes his an elder or a deacon who makes his sexual fetishes a part of his reputation and ministerial act is not qualified. Which
right,
is
I don't think it says again. It's so vague on what it's saying. You know, must anyway. I don't.
Yeah, it's not perfect. But you know, how do you? You know, the question I have is how do you legislate that? We've said chaste in his character, convictions, and conduct.
There you go. That's the language.
And you know,
what does that mean? There are guys that still uphold that Greg Johnson was that describes Greg Johnson, that he's been chaste in his in those things. And
well, I mean, there are guys who would say that, but can they convince a church court?
Well, I think they did. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, he left, and there were.
He was pressured out
by investigation requests. You know, yes. My Presbytery, Tennessee Valley. If Tennessee Valley Presbytery was willing to send something to Missouri Presbytery, that shows how the Overton window shifted. And in their letters to the congregation, the session of memorial said it was because of these letters that we knew that we were going to be investigated again. And I don't think that Missouri Presbytery, given the new constitution, given the things that he had said and the things the church was doing, I don't think they would have put up with it. But you know that's different from a guy who is chaste, who may have weird, unnatural struggles, but is struggling against them, is not making that front and center of his ministry. You know, I personally believe that such a person, you know, that there are some sinful desires that you may have that mean you don't need to be in a public office. But that's not something that the church has ever agreed on. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with where we are if we stick to it, and that's as you say, George, that's what remains to be seen.
Right. So what are you encouraged about with the PCA? You kind of said some of that already.
Yeah. I'm very encouraged with where our Constitution is right now. We have some, as I said, some of the clearest language regarding officer qualifications. I'm very encouraged by the seriousness of debate. Very encouraged that some of the guys, especially on the other side, who seem to speak a lot in previous general assemblies, they don't seem to be speaking as much. And it's not that I don't want to hear from them. It's that their arguments just weren't good. They were emotional. They were, well, I've never seen, you know, you remember the Jesus calling debate that we had a couple of years ago. There were a couple of guys, well, I've never read this book, so I'm not qualified to make a judgment about it and to know whether the church should investigate.
Yeah, that's not a speech you should be making on the floor. This then sit down and let the people who read the book know. I don't remember that. I do know.
Maybe,
you know,
maybe I hallucinated it. Maybe this is not real Ryan Beasley. Ryan Beasley.
Well, yeah, or the guy that might get up and say, I don't know. I'm just confused. Or it's like,
how did we get here, Mr. Moderator?
Yes, if you're confused, then please sit down and let those of us who aren't confused have the, you know. So I
think all that's very encouraging. I think our coordinators that we have right now, Steve Dowling, your boss's boss, as a ruling elder, Fred Greco as a former ruling elder. I think the work that John Byes did over the last year to just pour oil on troubled water, the mess, the distrust, the dysfunction, the neglect of the previous administration. You know, John came in and just shepherded and pastored the denomination in a way that was appropriate for a mailman, right? Because that's what the stated clerk is. He's a mailman. So he visited the presbyteries. He made himself available. He FaceTimed. He Zoomed. He called. He didn't advocate. He didn't agitate.
He didn't frame the debate. Yeah.
No. And I hope to see that Fred Greco will do the same. Despite the fact that Fred is loud and Italian, I have not heard a peep from him. Yes. Yeah. So, I like that. You know, I don't like hearing from clerks. I was a clerk of Presbytery, and guys would, you know, you should say this, you should say that.
Wait a minute. You were the clerk of the Presbytery?
I was clerk of Tennessee Valley Presbytery.
So when investigation requests came in, they were sent to you?
Oh, they were. Yeah.
About you.
Well, there was none about me at that time. See, okay. They tried to do it on the floor. They wanted to do an end run around the clerk. But again, the clerk's just a mailman. He receives a piece of mail. If it's about him, he sends it to the proper.
I remember somebody threatened you with that on X. And I said, well, by all means, send it to the clerk. It's Ryan. I mean, I know you would deal with it appropriately, but I just thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to complain about yourself.
Yeah. People, you know, when they
What is it? What's the deal, bro? Like, you are the least, to me, I've never seen you handle yourself inappropriately. I don't understand.
You haven't watched me long enough, I guess, but well, I think that when you can't win an argument, you try to, we see that in society. We don't like what you're saying. We can't refute what you're saying. So we're going to make what you're saying illegal. And we see that in the church courts. You know, I remember, you know, it's funny, George, you and I would both write about things that people were doing that even 5 years ago were unconstitutional. And people say, oh, you're too aggressive. How dare you take a screenshot of this thing that's on the internet and put it in an article on the internet? You've doxed these people. It's so aggressive. Well, I'm just giving you a for instance of the problem that I see, the trouble that I see, the irregularity that I see with this behavior. So we do that. Or sometimes we take the feedback and say, okay, I will speak in generalities. Well, see, it's fear-mongering. There's no specifics. No one's doing this. So, you know, we played a dirge for you and you didn't mourn. We played and you didn't dance. You know, it's just people don't want to have a conversation.
No, I you're right. It's funny you're talking about that. I remember that. So we'd give examples. When I would write, about, well, this is what's going on at PCA. And I put screenshots the way you did about like whatever, these X posts or whatever. And then it's exactly right. People are saying you're mounting charges online. I'm like, no, I'm just putting a screenshot and letting people of a public thing. And then when you talk in generalities, then it's like you said, well, name names, you know? So I do think there's a lot more transparency now, at least, than there was 5 years ago. Like the idea that, you know, two general assemblies ago when they stood up and basically said, one guy said, well, I think women should be allowed to be deacons. And then we get an overture to allow that. To me, that's an honest position.
Yeah.
It's not allowed in our denomination, but it's at least you're being open and honest about it, you know?
And the PCA, you're on the transparency front, you know, it used to be, you know, 25 years ago when Frank Smith was in the PCA and running Presbyterian News, and just the hostility to having an independent source of news for the PCA just blew the minds of the denomination, the Presbycrats, so much so that, at least according to Frank and to Aquila, that they were encouraging Presbytery clerks to copyright their Presbytery minutes with the aim that they could not be quoted in the Presbyterian News, which of course is absurd. You know, minutes are public document. You can quote copyrighted material all the time, but we've gone from that to the proliferation of podcasts and blogs. And, you know, the moderator of the assembly will come on my podcast. He's been on your podcast. The state clerk, you know, will come. You just had the coordinator of Mission North America on. There's been a sea change in the willingness of these denominational leaders to communicate in ways that are not the official channels, but to actually be available to churches and to other media, new media, as Mel Duncan calls it.
That's the phenomenal thing about, you know, I mean, we live in this very small world, and yet it is big. Again, like, you know, we're a small denomination compared to big denominations, but when you're in our world, it's big. And the idea that you can get, anybody can get access to any of these guys, you know, to, whether it was Fred Greco or Mel Duncan, or I don't know, I guess Keller would be a little elusive, and I understand that. And
but he's not a denominational. He was never a denominational leader.
No, he was.
He was never a moderator. He never held an office. So he was a public figure. He was a celebrity. But you know, how much influence does Keller have? And that's an interesting question.
He had a lot of influence.
Well, he did, but I think in many ways the last 3 or 4 years have seen the undoing of the failure of the Tim Keller project in the PCA.
And what would you define this?
The strategic plan, I think, was to make the PCA virtually indistinguishable from where the EPC was in 2010, and to prepare us for a merger with the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. I don't know if that was never stated, but just looking at it, it said, well, you know, we're loosening our relationship with NAPARC. We're broadening the spectrum of theological acceptability. We're opening seats at the table. There was an effort 2 times, I think, between 2010 and 2019 to put women on the permanent committees and agencies of the General Assembly. Both of those failed. And then, you know, by 2021, 2022, the assembly is very proactively tightening up control of our committees and agencies, and recommitting itself not to the National Association of Evangelicals, but to NAPARC. Recommitting itself to being robustly reformed, confessional, and moving in a completely different direction from the EPC.
Yeah. Wow. I never heard anybody speak on that. I mean, you need to do an episode on that.
Well, I could. I think last year I did sort of an overview of that in my GA report, or preview, just looking at how the PCA has shifted since 2010. Mm. Because Brian Chappell, yeah, it must have been last year, because Brian Chappell was the one of the main advocates for the strategic plan. And then, you know, with him ascending to the clerkship, to use a bad metaphor, is the strategic plan finally going to be implemented? Well, when he resigned as clerk, and just looking around the PCA, you see, wow, there was a real nadir of confessionalism and a zenith of broad new school RPCES influence. But that is
a nadir and a zenith.
Well, the nadir of confessional influence, right? You know, in 2016, 2010, you know, I was there in 2010 when it was in Nashville, and they're explaining the strategic plan. And they got a picture of JFK and a spaceship going up into space, and they're talking about how great the strategic plan is. And Joey Piper gets up there and he says, you know, I don't, you know, something, I'm paraphrasing, this was 16 years ago. You know, there's no scripture in the strategic plan. How can we adopt this as our strategic plan without scripture? And the guy just answers with a John F. Kennedy quote. So, you know, that's the level of debate in 2010. And we're moving toward, and also 2010 was the funding plan, remember, where it was going to be pay to play, that if you didn't give a certain portion of your income to the headquarters, and I know they don't like that term, so I'm using it as a metaphor, you won't get any votes at General Assembly, and that the presbyteries voted down. But the strategic plan was adopted or approved by the assembly. But then over the next, you know, 5 years, attempts to bring it to pass, right, with the Women's Study Committee report, which is terrible and should be repealed, rescinded, and shredded. You know, that was received. It was never approved. It was never adopted. It was just received. There were some recommendations that might have been adopted. But then, you know, starting in 2018, 2017, maybe even, undoing all of that, rejecting further changes. And then when Brian Chappell was, you know, made to resign as stated clerk, I just look around the denomination and say, we are in a totally different place from where we were in 2010.
Yeah.
We're much more like the OPC now than we were like the EPC in 2010.
And we do have really good relationships in NAPARC
now,
particularly with the OPC and the ARP. Yeah. So you keep saying 2010, what role did you have back then? I mean, that's a long time.
I brought water to the ruling elders of First Presbyterian Church Jackson.
So were you an intern?
I was an intern. And
so you weren't ordained?
I was not ordained, but First Pres Jackson graciously allowed interns to
That's awesome.
Go. Yeah. And they were still paying off some of the debt for the building. They said, you know, we can't provide you with housing, but we will pay you to go if you want to go to General Assembly. And and that was amazingly helpful to me as a presbyter later on, because I'd seen it in action. Now I think First Pres Jackson, they've paid off all their debt, and so they actually make accommodation for their interns to go to General Assembly and pay their way and prepare them to be active presbyters, which you know, I'm profoundly grateful for that.
Yeah. So probably most people don't realize this, but you were Ligon Duncan's intern.
I was the worst intern Ligon Duncan ever had. So, yes.
Talk about that. Like, how did you get that coveted role? Ligon was still at First Pres Jackson. First Pres.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you get that, and how long was that?
It was 4 years from first to graduation in seminary, first year to graduation. And he had come to Grove City and spoke, which is where, you know, Grove City is the finest institution of undergraduate learning to ever have awarded me a degree. He came for a conference, and I was involved in that conference and talked to him, and I think he encouraged me to apply for the internship, and I did, and they passed over a lot of more qualified and better applicants, and offered me the position, and they were very gracious and patient with someone who was very underqualified and not ready for that type of work.
Give us one funny story about how you let him down and what his reaction was to it.
Ooh, I just remember a lot of graciousness and okay, trying to find things that I could do well. And they were very patient at First Pres, and it was, you know, one time I was supposed to film something for, and like I'd never filmed before, but my hand, you know, my hand was shaking. I didn't know, you know, if it was one of those little cameras. So I'm just, and it's not like a huge shake, but like, I didn't even know that you should probably stabilize it with your other hand. And, you know, it's like, well, it's okay. Just send it on. And, you know, they did some video over, and, but, you know, they never mentioned it. It was just, they were so gracious, forbearing, and generous.
All right, you could share the real stories with me later. I love. Did you see that screen grab of Ligon at GA standing behind? The guy that was like, I know that wasn't like Ligon wasn't doing anything. He was just, but the way they caught him, it was just hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, he's a great guy, gracious guy, friendly, joyful, amazing preacher. Yeah. That's cool. You got to worship. You got to hear him preach every week, I guess.
Yeah. My ruling elders, when he preached at GA in Memphis, he went to I think he went to all the worship services, but after that one, he said, Ryan, I see his influence on your preaching. And, but yeah, I mean, I was And a lot of my time in seminary, I was going to both morning services. So I would, 8:30 and 11. And just to sit under excellent, preaching, superb craft, and to prepare for Sunday school.
You know what I know? So I've only heard a few of his sermons, and I've heard some talks, because I wasn't aware of him when he was at First Pres Jackson. I'm newer to the PCA. But it seems like he, as he preaches, there's a deliberate, his communication, he's very deliberate about giving you a roadmap of what he's going to do, but in such a way that it's not forced. Characteristic of his sermons? Like, he's going to tell you where he's going and how he's going to get there beforehand.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's so helpful as a listener. I found that I knew where we were going. But the way he got there was awesome.
Well, no, exactly. It's like, wow. Yeah. So I've definitely I wonder if his sermons still up from those days. Okay.
And they've been transcribed. So, they're searchable. Yeah. First Pres Jackson, fpcjackson.org has a wonderful library. Derek Thomas's sermons are all still up there. And then of course, the new administration there, Strain and Wiley.
What an amazing history of God's faithfulness to that church, with just amazing expositors, one after another, after another.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can, during my time there, Ligon had been there 16 years, I think. There were still people who remembered previously. And there was a lot of reformation that the Lord brought in those 16 years, just sitting under steady, consecutive expository preaching and a vibrant evening worship service. And people would, you think it's Jackson, Mississippi, and everybody's all hoity-toity. No, I mean, people would just hang out for an hour after evening worship, fellowshipping, talking about the Lord, encouraging each other. It was really beautiful to see that in a large church. You think of small church being close-knit, and you go there for one of their evening worship services, and I was profoundly encouraged. Just, you really got to know the evening worship crowd, and I think it's still that way.
Very cool. Well, let's kind of round the bend on this whole conversation. What's your favorite sport that involves a ball?
Oh.
You don't know any, right?
Pickleball.
I love pickleball. Yeah. Do you ever play pickleball?
We when we lived in Georgia, we had a little, our driveway was pretty long, so we could set up a net in our driveway and
yeah,
daughter.
That's
and I
great.
Back,
I love
and forth.
I love it.
It was fun.
Usually the reason I ask that is obviously there's, you make jokes about what's that sport. You miss some out. Yeah. What's your hobby? Or hobbies?
Oh, yeah. I haven't really haven't had a hobby in a while. I guess podcasting, writing, doing dishes.
Cooking.
Yeah, I do. I do enjoy cooking, especially grilling and cooking breakfast for wifey woo.
The pictures of the breakfasts you make are that's restaurant quality stuff, man. I usually end up having to eat something after I watch it.
It must be the filter.
who's your biggest theological influence from church history?
It's hard to say. I mean, Calvin, Lloyd-Jones is in, his preaching is influential. Dabney, Thornwell, Dabney, sacred rhetoric is still, how I judge a sermon. Thornwell's ecclesiology, I think it really hasn't been improved upon, that of Thornwell and Peck, at least. So
And where were you exposed to that? At RTS?
RTS and Grove City.
Okay.
Yeah. T. David Gordon was at Grove City, so got a good bit of Dabney. And then one of the music professors there, Joshua Drake, I think also was important in my discovery of Bob Dabney.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. Favorite movie?
Patton, probably.
What year was that one made? Is that one like the recent one, or are you talking about like the old?
Yeah, with George Scott, George C. Scott.
Oh, okay.
All right. Patton. Yeah,
I hadn't seen it. So you're a history guy. I mean, I picked up on that.
I do like a little bit of history. Yes.
Okay. What else? What else can I ask you?
Can't give you advice for maintaining a full head of hair.
It's thinning.
Yeah, mine too. The poor choir at church.
It looks good.
Well, yeah, but the choir at church, like the ladies in the choir could do their makeup in the reflection on my bald spot. I think
Turn around. Let me see. Let's see. I never. Oh, okay, it's coming. Yeah, you are earning. It's like a monk. You're like a monk. Right.
Yeah. So. Funny. At my grandfather's funeral, like I saw all my uncles, and it was like. That's going to be me because, all of them are bald. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So you know me. I've been shaving my head like with a buzz cut or bald for probably all of the time we've known each other. And I don't remember why I decided to grow it out. And like my whole congregation, all people like, wait a minute, you have hair? So I have some hair. I mean, I have hair. But like, yeah, but so – usually, but at least I know I can go bald. Like I can be a baldy because I've done that for so many years. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm trying to think if I have any other notes for us here. I don't. Any questions for me?
What do you consider your greatest weakness and how is that also your greatest strength?
My greatest weakness.
That's the Michael Scott question.
Yes, I know. I fixate. I got to learn to let things go.
Yeah. You love too much. And.
Well. Yeah, I don't know. I think like truth matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like truth is. People have different perspectives on what is true. I mean, truth is truth, but people have different perspectives on that. And so in the PCA, and this is some of the battles I've been in, if I feel like people are equivocating, like it's hard for me to, like I just want honesty, or if there's an issue, I want it dealt with and it'll bother me that we're not doing it, and that probably can, and that can drive behaviors that aren't healthy or helpful probably. So like just kind of a fixation, whereas like just let it go, George. Just let it go.
you and Elsa, right?
Elsa, yes. What's yours? What would you say is your?
So at the church I serve, the secretary, has candy and cookies in her office. And
you have a sweet tooth, do you, Ryan?
It's bad. So like Oreos, greatest weakness. I can finish off a box of Oreos in 2 days.
Yeah.
It's not good.
There's a lot of deflection in that answer, I gotta say.
Well, if people, your greatest weakness.
Well, when I worked for P&G, we didn't talk about weaknesses. We talked about opportunity areas. So there's the strengths and then there's opportunities,
That sounds very DEI.
Oh man, this was before DEI. Yeah, I left P&G in 2002. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting to be old.
Gen X, baby.
That's right. Well, this is fun. And, it's a podcast about podcasting.
Podcast about nothing.
A podcast about nothing. Yes. Well, I look forward to seeing you again, friend. I know we've run into each other at various conferences. We've even roomed together. We've had occasion to
I stole your belt.
You did. Well, do I ever get it back? That you,
no, no. You 5 years ago or something.
I guess it's
like
yours.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, you did, in all fairness, leave it in the room after you had checked out. So
yeah, I know.
Did intend to get it back to you. But
yeah.
One of my many failures. I guess my greatest weakness is returning lost property.
Yeah. It's brown. Okay.
More of a burgundy.
This is really at this point, maybe. All right, this has gone off the rails and nobody's even listening anymore. Man, I appreciate your friendship. I'll be praying
likewise,
for your new
George.
Call. Yes, I always like checking out Westminster Standard podcast with Ryan Beasy. Sometimes it's kind of Fox News-ish, but it's professional. It's it takes on a flavor of a news interview, honestly, sometimes.
I got Daryl Hart coming on tomorrow or Friday.
Did you ever have him on?
I've had him on before once, but yeah, he's going to come and talk the WSJ article. And I'm curious to know what
you should have me on with him. You should.
You want to come on?
I will.
All right. Friday, 1:00.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're going to tell him? I mean, okay. I mean,
he knows you.
I
think I'm going to title the episode "Wire Nationalism."
You should. Yeah, I'd totally come on. All right. Because, you know, I mean, I told him he's been the guest I've had on probably more than anybody at this point, I think. I've had him on like 4 times or so.
I really like him.
And they always it always goes well. And then he goes off the rails on X afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I really like DG Hart, Daryl Hart, personally. I think, I think the way he uses X inflames some people, but there's also some generational, you know.
Yes, I would love to be. I'd love to come on. I'd love to be a part of a conversation with him that I'm not hosting.
Yeah, well, let's do it. I'll make sure he's okay. Then he's not, you know, racist against Middle Eastern people or anything.
He's not. He's principal plural. Principal plural. <Yeah, I know. laughs> He loves it. He loves. Okay. Yeah. Well, good. hey, wait a minute. Are you getting your D-men?
Well, see, the thing is, I've got to go to a church function the first week of September, and then like for 3 days in the middle of the week, and then the very next week is the mandatory in-person thing.
Yeah, but you don't have to. You don't have to.
I was told that it is now required. So
yeah, but
I may just
you could do it remotely.
Well, the email that I got said, no, it is required unless there's extenuating circumstances.
Well, there is.
Yeah. I mean, it's the previous, I get it, but I just can't be gone 2 weeks in a row. And I think so. I may try to defer it a year because, you know, we're trying to find an assistant or a children's director, a youth director at the church. Because, you know, the church is on paper, you know, 300 communicant members and one full-time pastoral staff. So it might be better to start that after we get some new staff matriculated or
assimilated. But just don't let BTS works with people for their to meet their needs. It's their thing. I did it, that class you're talking about, via live stream. I couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And you can even anyway, I would talk to Ike or talk to whoever you're dealing
well,
with. But you're right. You might want to just wait a year.
Yeah, I may, but it's also, I don't want to, you know, I understand, you know, when Roy said it's, and he just emailed me.
Oh, it's Roy, yeah, McDaniel.
Yeah, and he said, look, you got to be there. And I understand. I mean, I get it. I'm not going to ask for special accommodations. If this means, you know, in God's providence that wait a year, you wait a year.
Okay,
but
well, there you go.
I get it. It makes sense that for the first meeting of the first class, you need to be there in person. If they say, you know, that counts, fine. But
yeah, well, maybe they're okay. Well, anyway, what we're talking about is Birmingham Theological Seminary and BTS.education. If you're interested in getting a doctor of ministry, they have just amazing programs. I love it. You can be in prayer for me. I'm trying to finish my dissertation now. It's taken me way too long, but the classes are done. And you can also get an MDiv, or if you're a ruling elder and just want to bone up on your polity, you can take classes there. I don't know if Fred Greco will still be teaching his class, but I know a number of ruling elders that learned PCA polity from Fred Greco. It's pretty cool. So bts.education. Ryan, thanks again, man.
Thanks, George. I enjoyed filibuster. Yeah, I'm glad we scheduled a podcast so we can just have a conversation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I wonder if I'll see the metric, the analytics of people actually watch this one.
Well, you know, as Rush Limbaugh used to say about the mainstream media note-taking or something. Maybe someone will be taking notes to bring charges against you or me on this podcast. We'll see.
I bet you people are watching it for that purpose.
Hate watching it. I love watching MSNBC on election night.
Lately. Oh, yeah, it is fun.
It's
fun. Oh, man. All right. Well, this has been an interesting Grace at the Gates.
Something at the Gates.